Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, we are live. Gravel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, and it's the only one and only, let me get this straight, Tornado, Tony Pennycow.
And why is the phone ringing?
whose phone's ringing? Our phone?
Oh,
we are live.
We're on delay. We're on tape delay.
Oh,
I have to stop that.
No, damn, that's a tape the one.
Right.
Why is the phone ringing? Who's phone ringing?
Hold on. Tonight we have a bunch of female referees from MMA. It's Late News Unlimited for the Combat Sports Show. We're going to have a round table. We got a message from Kim Winslow on LinkedIn, first MMA referee in the UFC. We have Michelle Browning that's also going to be joining us at the same time. It's 8:30. She is the first female referee in Texas. And then Danielle Curzon, who's actually descendant of royalty over there in the UK. She is the first major referee over there for mixed martial arts. So I hope you're ready to deal with a lot of estrogen.
Estrogen. Hey, I never have a problem talking to the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the Tornado, remember that?
Right.
Now, look, let me ask you a question. Are you excited about this weekend?
What is this weekend now?
What is this weekend? This is like Christmas, New Year's, Mardi Gras, St. Patrick's Day all rolled into one.
Hey, what am I missing? What am I forgetting?
It's the annual Lock Haven Boxing Show.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm headed up on Saturday. Going up to the show. I'm excited about it. And I haven't been able to go up for a couple of years. Every weekend or every year the weekend the show was going to be hit with like either a wicked snowstorm or an ice storm or something bad. And I didn't go up for like 3 or 4 consecutive years. And the last few times I had gone up, there were still guys. That I remembered. Either they maybe weren't on the team when I was there, but they were still on the previous years I had gone up. They were still some of the younger guys. So I hadn't gone for like 2 or 3 years. I think it was 2000. Well, you know, you younger guys, these guys went off before the fight. They were slap fighting. You know, they were dancing around, and they were, you know, posing. And I'm like, shit, I remember when I fought for Lock Haven, and Doc was really strict back then. You know, now that he was, you know, he's getting older and he's kind of fading out of the picture, you know, a lot less strict. I mean, these guys were just goofing off and hamming it up. And every guy on the main card, I think except for one, lost. I was like, you got to be shitting me. So the following year when I wasn't working and I was about to start my new job, I said, listen, I contacted Doc and Coop and John Stout, who is now the assistant coach. He was just starting there when I finished. And I said, listen, let me come up and at least maybe do a guest. And he said, yeah, you know, you were a legend up here. Come on up. I go up there. I mean, these guys now, not just the boxing room that we had, which is like almost like a padded wrestling room with some bags and stuff, but now, like, they have a separate room with a ring in it and all this stuff, and the young guys didn't appreciate it, and that's what bothered me. And Coach Cooper was like, what was hurting the team now was he had all new young guys on the team. And now the Doc's kind of, you know, fading out of the picture. He was really a big draw. And, you know, these younger guys, there was no real veteran leadership on the team. You get just freshmen or maybe first-year guys, what's going to happen is you're going to – nobody's going to be able to really teach you about, you know, the traditions and, you know, the pride of Lock Haven Boxing. When I got there as a freshman, and I was kind of a, you know, leaders on the team, guys like Todd Steiner, who was always nice to me, and there were a couple other guys on the team, and they were veterans, and they pretty much taught me what Lock Haven Boxing is all about. And if they kicked my ass a couple times, they teach to me, too. And then I became a veteran, and I was taking younger guys in the mind. Like Todd Steiner, he was a guy, he didn't really, he was nice to me, but he was also teaching me, like, hey, here's a work ethic you got to put in, and, you know, when you go on there, like, you don't want to embarrass yourself in front of, you know, your classmates or your family, your friend. But at the same time, you don't want to embarrass team. That's why you got to work hard and you got to, you know, put the best effort you can out there. So that taught me a lot. So as I became, you know, a couple times, you know, I would, you know, take some of the younger guys and I would, I never had it. But then again, I would be a mentor too, and I would talk to these guys. So when I went up as a guest coach a couple years ago, you know, it was a very small. And you can, like, I saw, like, the one kid hit the back like 15 seconds, and he just stopped, and he looked around and looked in the mirror and this and that, waited about 45 seconds. Then he hit the bag for about another 30 seconds. I pulled him aside. I said, yo, I said, listen to me. I said, I don't know how it is, you know, when you normally practice, but I'm here today. And I said, I know you don't know who I am, and you're probably forget me 2 minutes after I leave. But I said, when I'm here today, you give me 3 minutes. If the clock is 3 minutes, you give me 3 minutes. And I said, it only helps you in the long run. I stand inside the kid. And the kid kind of looked at me like a little like snarky little look on his face. And you could tell the words didn't mean anything to him. This kid wasn't a true Lock Haven Box. There was a couple other young guys on the team that they listened, and you could tell, like, what I was saying was rude to them. They were listening, and when I came back 2 weeks later, those two kids won. Freshmen, they both won, and they did well. This other kid, you know, it was just, you could tell, just didn't give a shit. Come the second, he was out of gas, and he was tired. He quit. And his family and his university. He's got to go to class for that Monday. He's got to go to class. And you know what? There are people that were at that show like, "Poor, you ain't shit, kid. You know, you can say you box." But I thought you just quit fast. And the reason that happened was because he didn't put the work in. I was hoping this year that I would have had the chance to go up again before the show and do another guest coaching routine. But with my job right now and the fact that I have very limited days off, I could not, you know, take a day off to do it. So I'll be going up on Saturday. I'm going to ask Coach Coop and Doc and John if they will allow me, you know, when they're before the fights, when they're taking the guys' hands and everything, if they will allow me to come in and maybe just talk to the team. You know, we have a lot of veterans up there. There were guys that were, you know, had more credentials than I did, guys that were national champions. But I'll tell you right now, I don't think there's anybody out there that is a better motivator than I am. And I'll but more passionate about it than I am. And you know that, Rich. That's why I'd like to go up there and say, let me talk to the team and say, hey, you know, I ain't here to get you all fired up. Let's run out of there, like an Animal House and give you a big speech. Basically, all I want to say to you is, you know, this is your night. You know, you get this one time a year. It's your friends, it's your family, it's your classmates out there. You know, this is a chance. You know, you have Lockheed University in your chest. You know, more than, you know, your own, you know, personal name. It's Lockheed University. And, you know, you go out there and you do yourself and, you do proud. You do yourself, you do your team, you do your school proud when it's the one time a year you get to fight there. If that doesn't, you know, sink into some heads, then it's worthless for me to even talk to them.
Well, is there any boxing over the weekend? I did catch Friday Night Fights again. Wasn't all that spectacular, but it was a good fight. The main event. I don't even remember off the top of my head who it was, but other than Lockhaven, yeah, what big fights are coming up this week? I know we had UFC on Fuel TV last night. I didn't get to watch much of it, but I do know the results.
Well, yeah, I was trying to, I know there wasn't any big HBO or Showtime fights on Saturday, because I spent the whole weekend looking to see if I could find anything, and unfortunately I could not. I got it even, the Friday night fight, yeah, I do remember that. The first fight was unspectacular, let's be honest. It was a fight, you have a young up-and-coming guy, fighting an opponent that, you know, you've got to beat spectacularly. The opponent, all the guy was interested in doing was holding and clutching and turning it into a boring fight, which it turned out to be. The main event, Teddy Atlas picked it to be a mismatch, and ho-hum, yeah, it was. Sounds, and it was over. And that was the Olympian, Demetrius Andrade. Very good-looking prospect. I know he was supposed to fight a kid from Philadelphia that I know by the name of Derek Ennis, who I've covered a couple of times. And to be honest, Andre would have beaten Ennis. I liked Derek Ennis. He's a good young kid. But the problem is he doesn't, you know, have the bench, and he has the lapses. I was at a fight one time a couple of years ago. I covered it for Fight News Unlimited. And he was starting to get ahead of this one kid. And I remember the actual words that I wrote on there, how he was sharpshooting them with single punches. I was like, sharpshooting them, taking control, knocked out. That's the actual way that I wrote it. And I remember turning to one of the trainers from my old gym who was there. He and I were talking. And I remember saying, I said to him, Mr. Charles, I said, look at my report as I'm writing it. And he goes, sharpshooting, single punches, knocked out. And I'm like, yeah, left himself open, massive left hook, and it was over. Derek Ennis wouldn't have felt the same fate against Demetrius Andrade, but he was sick, put in a replacement. Teddy Atlas said, you know, it ain't going to be long and it ain't going to be pretty. And he got two rounds, and Demetrius added to his undefeated record. He's a prospect with a lot of potential. It's time for him to really, step up his game a little bit. Derek Ennis would have been a nice step up. It would have been a nice little progression for him. Unfortunately, when that didn't happen, they had to put anybody in there, and it was just a keep busy and pad the record fight for Andre.
Yeah, it's Steve Smoger was the referee, too, your favorite guy.
I like Steve Smoger. Nice guy. I am.
It was kind of funny because Teddy Atlas and his sidekick there, Joe Shorts, Jim Shorts from the arcade game, I'll always remember his voice from. His real name is Joe Tessitore, but he was in it once. It was like, I think it was one of those video games where it was a baseball game, but you could like beat up the guy's face. It was like a violent baseball game. But he played the role of the announcer who was named Jim Shorts, literally. They both agreed that Steve Smoger is one of the best referees in the business, so that's kind of interesting, seeing as that's one of your favorites, too. And that was the best thing I heard anybody else say that.
I like about Steve, first of all, just getting the chance to talk to him at some shows, you can tell, you know, he's a really down-to-earth guy, he's a good referee, but other things about him is, like, you rarely, now I'm sure Steve's like, yo, don't jinx me out here, but you rarely ever see Steve botch a call. You know, you rarely ever see him stop a fight too early, but you rarely ever see him stop a fight too late.
And one of the things that Friday night was he chastised, I think, for not listening to the instructions, like being in his own world.
Yeah, you're right, he did. You know, he you know, commands respect out there. I know there's been a lot of top-flight referees over the year. All the guys are going to have a bad night. I mean, Richard Steele is a great referee. He's always going to be, associated with the Chavez-Taylor fight in 1990, stopping it with 2 seconds left. And I know he's made, you know, a few other controversial calls. Joe Cortez, for a long time, one of the top referees in the sport, you know, recently, and I'm not saying recently as in, like, the last few months, but I'm talking about the last few years, you could really see, you know, he's slipped and, you know, he's made some questionable calls. The Ortiz-Mayweather fight when, first of all, was letting Ortiz roughhouse him, then we had the headbutt in there, and then the retaliation from Mayweather, where Ortiz was looking at Cortez, and Cortez was looking at Ortiz. And the only guy that was going to the pump was Mayweather, who was punching him out. Even a guy like Mills Lane. Mills Lane was a top referee for a number of years, and he'll always be associated with the fight button. But even that, I mean, he was part of a fight one time with Bernard Hopkins and when he pushed Hopkins out of the ring and Daniel broke his ankle. Yeah, that was mentioned. They ended up fighting 3 times. Robert Allen. The Allen was doing real well. They were in a clinch. They were roughhousing, and next thing you know, Mills Lane trying to break him up, and then he was Hopkins out the ring. But Steve, you rarely ever see him lose control. You rarely ever see him, make a bad call. And what's good now is, like, he does a lot of shows in Philadelphia. I've met Steve at a couple shows, and a friend of mine, Gary Rosado, who's a referee, that I know from Lock Haven, he was the guy to get the team started back in the early 80s. He's done a lot of the shows, and you could see Steve, like, talking to him and everything, kind of, like, mentoring him. And I remember we were walking out one time, me, my dad, and Gary were all walking out together, and Steve pulled Gary aside and says, you know, you're one of the best young referees in the sport. You're really doing well, and you know, you're really progressing. And then we see who does a very good job of getting, you know, opportunities where he's helped, where he's refereeing fights. He refereed one Philadelphia 2 years ago with Bernard Hopkins, fighting on the university campus of Temple, and Gary is getting in line for world title fights. He is getting mentored from a guy like Steve Smoger.
Mm-hmm. Well, shifting gears. Here's a little bit to mixed martial arts. We had UFC on Fuel number 1 last night. And for whatever reason, I don't get Fuel on basic cable. I don't know who does. But I get FX. I don't understand why I don't get Fuel. I mean, they're the same company, I guess. They're all Fox. But anyway, they had a whole card. I got to watch pretty much just the first round of the main event, Diego Sanchez versus Jake Gallant. But I did read a lot of commentary and stories on the fight itself, and watching the first round, there were a lot of people that said that, you know, Diego should have won the fight, but they were basing their opinion on the fact that he won the first round in their eyes. And there's no way, me watching it, I could say that he won that first round. Ellenberg turned out to throw way more strikes than usual, I think. He's more of a wrestler, which probably his best wrestling fight was against Sean Sherk, who is one of the best wrestlers in MMA history. He beat him by decision. So Diego Sanchez really didn't have a chance against him. And he won by unanimous decision, Ellenberger did. And Diego's actually talking about moving down a weight class now. But Ellenberger moves to 27-5, and Diego Sanchez goes to 23-5. Also on the card, we had couple heavier guys, Stefan Struve and Dave Herman. Herman, actually, I saw down in Iowa one time that he was kind of a weird dude, but he really furthered the image of himself as unpredictable last night, because he came in clean shaven his last fight, and last night he comes in looking like a dude. And they actually were joking that he was wearing a brown shirt because he had so much hair on his chest. And he got knocked out this time, but he had a really good fight against John Olav Einemo last time out. And a very entertaining fight. I think it won fight of the night. But this time he got knocked out in the second round. I didn't see the whole fight. I didn't see parts of the first round. But for some reason they're really shaking up these free streams out there. There's this one, firstrowsports.tv. The federal government came in and shut them down completely, so they actually changed the URL to firstrowsports.eu, and they're back in action like nothing ever happened. So I'm going to show you that if you're going to operate something to feed illegal fights to the fans, you got to do it overseas to get your best protection. But anyway, we also had Ronnie Marks won a split decision over Aaron Simpson. One of the only stoppages of the night, Stipe Miocic won against Philip DeFries by knockout. TJ Dillashaw beat Walel Watson by unanimous decision. Ivan Menjivar beat John Albert by rear naked choke submission in the first round. Magna Rocha by knockout in the first round. It seemed like it was, if it was going to be a stoppage, it was early. There was only one that went into the second round, and that was barely a minute in, a little over a minute in, and that was Dave Herman's fight. So then we had two decisions to round it out. Justin Salas beat Anton Kuvanin by unanimous decision, and Tim Means beat Bernardo Mugglehaves by unanimous decision. So that does it for the CIV card. And I'm just looking at a picture of Diego from after the fight, and he does look pretty beat the hell up. I don't know how anybody can win the first round, because, I mean, that's the one round I watched at least twice now. He was taking a lot of kicks, a lot of punches to the head, and a lot of people were kind of pissed that it wasn't a five-round fight, because the UFC just recently made a decree that all main event fights are going to be five rounds. So this is a main event. Well, this is a five-round main event for some reason. And if the guy got beat up that bad in three rounds, I don't know what five rounds would have done to help him. And a lot of fans. I definitely would have to say that what he does as far as fighting, he usually wins the stare down contest. He's got the worst mean mug in MMA as far as, staring people down. Anyway, we got a couple guests lined up here. Not sure who is who, but I see a couple people on hold here, so we're going to connect them and see who we have here. We're suspecting Danielle Curzon, Michelle Browning, and Kim Winslow. Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear us?
Hi, this is Kim.
Kim. Okay, we have Kim, and I recognized a British accent there. That must be Danielle, right?
Yeah, hello.
And then also know what my accent is, Michelle.
All right. And so do we have Michelle on, too?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, I don't know how we're going to do this. Like maybe one at a time. I have a couple of questions that number one, how did you all get involved in the sport in the first place?
Who do you want first, Rich?
Let's start with Kim.
How did I get involved in the sport? Okay, that's going back a few. Are you getting me clear?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. Started back in the sport in 2006. Started out in boxing, switched to MMA. And was inspired by Mills Lane. And was more comfortable. Yeah, exactly. Let's get it on. Was more comfortable with MMA, and I never looked back.
I still keep in touch with Mills' sons who have Let's Get It On promotions out there in Reno, Nevada.
I do. I work with them often.
So how about Danielle? How did you first get involved?
I started Thai boxing at the age of 12, and then I went into kickboxing, and I got into MMA in 2006.
And Michelle?
My story is a little bit longer, so I'll try to condense it. But I've been involved in martial arts for about 10 years. When I first saw my first MMA bout, I was thoroughly disgusted by it. decided to educate myself. And basically, I have two old and two girls. So I decided to go into officiating. And here I am.
All right. Oh, we got an echo there. that's better. All right. So obviously, you got to be facing a lot of sexism in the sport. You know, what's that like to be a referee and you know be surrounded by a lot of men in that business who don't give you credit?
To be honest, I'll give my standpoint. I don't get any sexism from the commissions, from the fighters, from the corners. The people that give me the most sexist comments are some of the people in the crowd. And they'll kind of do little cat calls here and there, but I've never once had, I've never heard anything from people over in side or page side, if you will. I don't know if my girlfriends here have experienced that. But
well, when I first started, this is Tim. When I first started, I got the are you serious kind of look. From the fighters, and then when you have your one-on-ones with them, they realize you know what you're doing, and you earn the respect, and then they have no problem. They just want somebody who's fair and knows the game, knows what they're doing, and that's all they care about. They don't care if you're a woman or a man, just that you're capable. So sexism is definitely going to be part of the game. It just hopefully will be less and less as we continue and there are more women that enter the field. It's been there. It's just not as bad as it was when I first started.
Right.
Danielle, what about you?
I experienced a little bit when I first started, but then as I was getting more and more well-known around the circuit, that has dropped quite a lot and people just accept me and don't really treat me any different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this earlier, and I was wondering, you know, if anything, the only thing I could think of that people could say that, you know, a woman is not as good as a man would be if it came to ripping a guy off another guy in the midst of a match. And do you ever have any problem with that as far as, you know, being able to get a person to stop punching another guy in a match? Or is that just a moot point because you've learned how to deal with it?
Well, my very first pro fight was between two super heavyweights, a 386-pounder and a 392-pounder super heavyweights. That was my first pro fight, and I had to get in between them for a stoppage, and I had no problem stopping the fight and stopping them from punching each other. So I continue to prove that I'm capable of stopping a fight. It's all in a matter of knowing what you're doing and that you're capable, and I've never had a problem stopping a fight. And I think it's disrespectful to fighters to treat them like they're animals and that they're not capable of stopping. So I find it insulting for fighters to insinuate that they're not capable of controlling themselves.
All right. Yeah, I never heard of anything an incident or anything related to that, but one thing that I noticed when I was refereeing a few amateur boxing fights myself is you just got to use your voice most of the time and just yell break, and people listen to that if you're loud enough. So.
Well, actually, a woman's voice they use for training and in military for stressful situations, so that is our advantage, is that women's voices penetrate better than male voices. They do use it for military and training and stressful situations, and so we actually have an advantage over our male counterparts.
Awesome.
The only problem I ever had, and once again, this was refereeing boxing, and this was actually refereeing training in a sparring session. I'm going back about 15 years ago, refereeing a sparring session, and the one young kid, I had actually sparred with him before, and I had lumped him up pretty good, and now I had kind of graduated. At the time, I was working more as an official, and this kid was back, and he sparred with another guy, and he was not he seems almost like a young version of Mike Tyson, except without the skill. He was just very aggressive, very angry. You could just tell he just didn't listen very well. And he would sit there, and he'd be roughhousing, and I'd be like, okay, and I'd be like, break. No break. He would just keep punching and roughhousing. I'd be shot, break, to the point I have to physically get in there and almost push him back. And I look at him, I'm like, kid, I was in the ring with you. You're not a bad fighter, but God damn it, pay attention. When I say break, you look at me and you break and you take two steps back. And we just never broke through his thick skull.
Well, I think you do have to maintain control of your environment. You are the ref, that you have to be in control at all times. And if you see somebody that is getting to that point, you have to address it before it gets that far. I think you let it get too far. So if somebody's not breaking when you tell them to break, you need to address that, absolutely. And I have had to get physical with fighters that don't listen, and I have to push them up against the cage sometimes. I don't like doing that, but if I have to do that to stop a fight, I do what I have to do. And I have to take points, I take points. You do what you have to do to maintain control of your environment because you are the one in control.
Now, have any of you been in the position where a fighter doesn't even realize the fight's over, whether he's stunned or whatever, and he treats you like he's the opponent, like you're the opponent, tries to take you down? I've seen this happen in a few fights, but I just wondering if it's...
I think every referee has that happen, if not at least once a fight, then once a month.
Regularly.
Yes.
I've had it where I've had one of the fighters... where I told him everything on the ground, and he's like, yes. I said, was me. And he just looked very humiliated that I was his opponent on the ground. I've had another where I've had a fighter had a single leg on me, and I was holding off the other fighter, captured by film, but for some reason the audience didn't see it. So I was booed for that stoppage, but it's in photographic memory for me that I had two fighters that I was taking on at the same time. So there are things that we obviously see that the crowd doesn't, and that I have as a nice memento for a reminder for me.
And One thing that we talked about a lot earlier in the emergence of it, more so than lately, is the lack of a standing eight count. I used to think that was a bad thing, but now I'm kind of in agreement that it kind of saves a lot of people from further injury. What's your position on that individually, and how does that make MMA so much different from boxing that there is no standing eight count to stop a fight? It makes you have to make that decision.
It's easy. One concussion per event. We don't have repetitive concussion injuries in MMA where they have that in boxing, and that's where so many boxers have the horrible impact later in life, and hopefully they don't have that in MMA. But just in training, the same is in training where it's repetitive impacts to the head is typical in training with boxing, and there's so much more to MMA than is in boxing where there's so many different ways to win. And boxing is just the same concussive head impact over and over and over. And it just is very traumatizing to the brain.
Yeah,
so that's it.
I've seen different studies. I mean, a lot of people point to the fact that boxers tend to get more injuries, like long-term brain injury effects, like Parkinson's or chronic encephalitis there. Whereas MMA, the most comprehensive study I ever saw in MMA was they said that fighters end up with more concussions per capita, but it doesn't end up, you know, giving as much long-term effects. So I think the jury's still out because it's such a young sport compared to boxing. But the big thing
well,
is
boxers are guaranteed concussion.
Almost, yeah, because it's such a target. You've got to go for the head. Real wrestling, unless you're trying to hug the guy to stop him from hitting you. So I can relate to that. But as far as you know, being pioneers of your genre as referees, what's your ultimate goal in the sport as a female referee and just as a referee in general for everybody?
Well, my goal is for all the fighters to be able to compete in a fair, safe environment, and to be able to continue their careers. What about you, Danielle?
I would say it's the same as Kim, but my ultimate goal is to become a UFC referee like Kim has.
I'm going to echo both my friends' sentiments. I want the exact same thing that they want.
And what's different about the UK, Danielle? Is there differences or anything, or is it just pretty much the culture?
There is a lot of differences, and that's one of the reasons that I've come out to the States to try and learn from the best. We don't have a governing body over in the UK at the moment, and I think that is a massive downfall, whereas over here you've got the Athletic Commission. And the reason I've come out to do the Herb Dean course is to get properly certificated so that I can operate as safely and fairly as possible.
And as far as you know, why you enjoy the sport? What would you say each of you love most about mixed martial arts itself?
It's definitely the groundwork. I come from a stand up background, kickboxing, Thai boxing, and back in 2006, you know, all the grappling and jiu-jitsu really intrigued me. And I think you need even more skill to be good on the ground as you do stand up.
Yeah, it seems like the fan base has gotten to the point where they no longer boo when he goes to the ground as much, especially in the national major televised shows. But sometimes you see it in the local shows, so it's a little bit. But it seems like people appreciate it more for the art that it is than when it first started.
Can you say that again, please?
I was just saying it seems like the guys that have fight go to the ground, they used to get booed, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Now it seems like people appreciate the fight no matter where it goes, as long as there's some action.
You're right. The crowd is more educated. Mm-hmm.
more interested in all the aspects of the game. Kim and tell us what you love most about mixed martial arts.
What do I love most about it? I love all aspects. I love seeing something new. That's what excites me now. If I can see something new, I'm excited. I'm always looking for the next new move. If I see something new or something that's been modified, it excites me.
All right. Michelle?
What I appreciate the most about mixed martial arts is it's combined two of my loves and put it together, and that is the extreme athleticism of these fighters. I have a pretty strong athletic background, and then also just the martial arts itself. You know, just being able to break down all the different arts that are brought to the cage. Those two different things are brought together, and it's a beautiful display. It's fantastic. I love it. And like him, I like looking at the new techniques and everything that's coming out, and especially talking about the ground game that Danielle brought up. Jiu-Jitsu is evolving so at such a rapid rate, and it's just great to see how things are being pulled off and things are happening in there. And I'm just absolutely fascinated how these people can get in there, and they can go through the first round, and they're absolutely just beat up and they're brutalized. They sit down in that stool, and when the third round starts, they get up and they walk back to the center of the cage, and they go at it again. And that to me is inspiring. And that's what that human war is your spirit to me. Just it really, really inspires me.
Cool. As far as favorite fighters, do any of you have a single favorite fighter or group of favorite fighters that you really love to watch, regardless whether you're refereeing the fight or not?
I have favorite fighters. Sure.
For me, anybody that walks in the cage is my respect, because it takes a lot to be able to go in there, and it's such an exciting sport, and knowing that anyone has the chance to win is what excites me. So, no, I don't have a favorite fighter. They're all my favorites.
Good answer, good answer.
Without naming names, can each of you give us an example of one of the worst things you've ever seen somebody do in the cage or ring as an MMA fighter?
Worst thing? I would call it unsportsmanlike conduct. I don't like any unsportsmanlike conduct. If I see it, anything purposeful, unsportsmanlike conduct, I'm taking points. No questions asked. And I tell all my fighters that ahead of time. So don't even play it with me. It's like I will take points right off the bat if there's unsportsmanlike conduct. And there are some that it's right in the line if it's where you raise your hand up, touch a glove, and kind of get the other guy to go to do that, and you stuck punch him. Unfortunately, you have to protect yourself at all times, and you have been given the command to fight, so that's legal. But do I like it? No.
You know, one thing I really don't like is at the end of a fight, when a fighter has won either by KO, TKO, or submission, is the over-celebration. Jumping on the side of the cage, throwing your hands up, that's cool, whatever. But and it kind of falls in line with what Kim was saying with the unsportsmanlike conduct. It's the extreme celebration, and it just, I'm not a big fan of that.
I like how they draw the attention away from the down fighter, give him his respect. So if they want to celebrate, go for it, as long as it's not to the point of being disrespectful, flipping off the crowd, that kind of stuff. Do your celebrating. I don't have a problem with that. Just give the down fighter the respect of being taken care of. That's all.
Each of you say was your best moment in the sport so far.
Best moment in the sport so far. Okay. Gosh, there's too many. I can't pinpoint just one. I'm sorry, but there's just too many. There's just too many. I just have too many visions floating through my head of many bests, and there's so many more to come, I'm sure.
Right. Anyone else want to weigh in on that?
To date, maybe for me, just being introduced as the first female referee in Texas. That's, I don't know. I mean, everything, there have been a lot of incredible moments, a lot of fantastic moments, The Fed has really won best. I don't know. That's a tough question.
Probably my best moment was being made permanent by Dave O'Donnell on UCMMA Cage Rage over in the UK.
I guess my first UFC assignment, I'll say that's my best moment. You know, when I first got that first assignment, I was pretty excited. But, you know, as far as that's not really what you're looking for, I think. But, you know, that's our highlights, I guess.
Right. And what was that like to break into the UFC? Was it a tough road, or was it just kind of a coincidence that you ended up getting that?
No, I worked hard for that. No, I worked my way up. I've been doing this since 2006. So, yeah, I worked my way up. It wasn't just handed to me, and I worked for it. So I'm not going to downplay that. No, it wasn't a coincidence. I worked my way up. I worked small shows. I worked shows that didn't have athletic commissions. I saw a lot of really bad stuff, and I certainly am not going to go backwards.
Right. And you obviously connected these two other ladies onto the broadcast tonight, Kim. So what's it like being a mentor to some of these younger ladies and just other ladies who are interested in being referees?
Well, I do. I mentor not just ladies. I do mentor a couple of gentlemen as well. And you would be surprised how easily people are dissuaded. So I will give them a task to complete, and many of them are just fall to the wayside because they want the quick, easy fix to the top, and it doesn't work that way. You have to work your way up. So these ladies are doing the work. So that's why they're here. They're working their way up, and they've got strong personalities, and you need that to be able to survive in this environment. So these ladies have what it takes, and there have been many that have come and gone because they don't. You have to be doing it for the right reason, and you've got to be able to withstand the scrutiny, which, you know, every referee in this sport is under a great deal of scrutiny, and the more high-profile shows you work, the more scrutiny you are under, and you have to be able to withstand the pressure, otherwise you won't survive.
Right. As far as controversial decisions, it's kind of seems like it's something you probably all faced. It's almost inevitable, I think, that you're going to end up having a referee a fight where a lot of people aren't going to like the way it turns out. And a lot of times it's obviously because of your decisions. What's it like to have a fight happen under your watch where people are pissed at you at the end because they think you made the wrong decision? Is it something that you struggle with, or something that you just stick to your guns and get over quick?
Well, it's all a matter of how you feel about how you performed. Many times that I don't agree with the scrutiny. I feel that it's unwarranted. But if I feel that there's something that I've done wrong, I will view the footage and I will see what I can improve on. And that's all I can do, view it and see what I need to improve on, and I work on it and try to do better. But other than that, it's just that. You've got a lot of armchair quarterbacks who think it's really easy to do our jobs, but it's not. We've got real time to deal with. We don't have instant replay. We don't have, you know, a lot of time to review and look at and make decisions and, you know, looking at it again and again and again. It's all instant right there on the spot, and that's what we have to work with. And I'm human. I will make mistakes. I just try to make them as few and as minimal as possible. So I think that my record is pretty good, and I am a good referee. Otherwise, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Right. Good answer. Michelle or Danielle?
What my thing that people pick up on is that I'm quite strict to blows to the back of the head, and when I see that, I do stop the fight and I do deduct points. And I have had the crowd booing me for that, but fight to save is paramount, and blows to the back of the head are illegal for a reason because they're dangerous, so I stick by that all the time.
I know for me, I like Danielle. I'm pretty strict with my interpretation of the rules and how they've been explained to me by my mentors. So sometimes I do get a little bit of flack for that, but I've always said that 50% of the crowd is going to love you, the other 50% is going to hate you, and in the next fight, that same 50% that love you, they're going to hate you. So I just, the fans are very wishy-washy, and you're going to be loved and hated at the exact same time, so you just roll with the punches. Know that in that moment, in that judgment call that you made, based on all of your experience, your knowledge, and your training, you made that right call. And like Kim said, if there is a problem and you kind of question yourself or second-guess yourself, you know, I've gone back and I've reviewed the footage. I even put my footage out to, you know, my mentors and said, hey, what do you think about this? And we'll have a little roundtable discussion. And, you know, I learned from it and just move on. You know, it's like Kim said, we're going to make mistakes. Just try to minimize the mistakes is what our goal is.
What do you think about the future of MMA? Obviously, it's been known as the fastest growth sport in the world. And the UFC's been making a lot of big moves, but overall, of course, the sport has grown tremendously. What do you all think about how far it's going to go and how far it's already gone?
I would love to see some other agencies come up and build, and I would love to see women move up in the sport, of course. And I would like to, I don't want to see the market oversaturated. That's my biggest fear. I think there's a lot of talent out there, and I see a lot of people getting into this sport, and there's a lot of talent. So it's going to be very competitive, and you're going to see a lot more talent entering.
I think from a job security standpoint, I hope it grows more than it has, and it continues to grow. I love doing this, and I want to be able to do it every night of the week if I can.
About you, Daniel?
I'd like to see that the UK get a governing body for MMA and it become a more respected sport over in the UK. So I think we should be following more what the Americans are doing with it.
I would like to work with these ladies one time.
Now, are you're all together for the first time right now?
Yes, we are all together. We've never met before in person, so yeah, we're all together in the same place right now.
And what was it like first meeting each other, having that badge of honor of being female referees?
Well, actually, for me, I think it's more means more to me probably than to them because I've never, since 2006, I've never met another female referee for this sport. So this is I've been waiting for this for a long time, so it's nice for me.
It's really lovely too. I've always wanted to meet Kim, and then Kim introduced me to Michelle, and it's really nice to be here all together.
You know, it's interesting, just a few minutes ago when this interview started, I was sitting there speaking, I was like, you know, I'm honored to be considered in this group of women, and that, you know, we're the pioneers, we're the, I guess, trailblazers, and of course, we're, you know, right behind Kim. Kim is a true trailblazer for us, but what a small group that we are, and what a very prestigious, not a prestigious, but I guess, well, we're a prestigious group, but I am just so incredibly honored to be part of this and part of history in the making. And you know, these two ladies, they are, I mean, just fantastic. You know, we have one lady, she was the United States and the world's first female. We have another lady, she was her country's first female referee. So just, I'm deeply honored to be a part of this.
Texas is a pretty big state, which some people say thinks they're their own country. So.
Well, we are.
You're on it pretty significant, too, I would say, being the first female referee in Texas. So don't count yourself short on that one. But obviously, the UFC is the top dog, and they've been, especially Dana White, has been kind of outspoken about not wanting too many MMA females, or at least, you know, saying that there's not enough of them out there to make it competitive. What do you ladies think about that aspect of the game, and how do you think the industry itself can go about giving women more opportunities to have the spotlight in mixed martial arts?
Every time I've seen him, he's been nothing but nice to me.
But as far as women's MMA, he's been really outspoken, saying that it's not going to happen in the UFC, and it's just.
Well, I can understand that honestly, and I agree with this point, because there simply aren't enough women to fill the weight classes, and the small group of women that there are just—they'd be fighting each other over and over again. So until they develop the talent pool, I can see why he doesn't want to put them there. And I know I probably won't be liked for saying that, but I'm a ref. I'm used to not being liked.
Anyone else want to weigh in on that?
No. I think Kim said it all.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can relate to that answer, too, because, I mean, I'm seeing the headlines of another movie now. And she used to be the face of women's MMA, and then she got beat by the Brazilian. and she just got popped for steroids. So it's kind of a big hit for women's MMA.
Yeah, you're kidding.
Supposed to be.
I heard something about that.
But, it's just... For me, it's something that's always been near and dear to my heart, because when I was a senior in high school, I wrestled with one of the first women wrestlers to wrestle a varsity match in Massachusetts. And
was that you?
Well, I was on the same team as her. I didn't wrestle her.
Oh, okay.
But she ended up going to Harvard and being the first female wrestler for Harvard. So... she proved herself time and time again, and she actually got a few other girls to try out for the team, but none of them ever stuck it out. She actually stuck it out, and she got a lot of flack for coming to school every day with blue hair, but it was even worse when she tried to be a wrestler. And she stuck it out, and she made it, and I'll never forget the first kid she beat. He had already been taking a lot of grief for not being in the best shape and, falling back in the runs and practice and everything, and then she whipped his ass on the mat. And it was like, wow,
Well, things are changing. I can say this, that when I trained in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and I trained in Muay Thai and grappling and stuff like that, I was training at two different schools at the same time, and there were no other women. I was the only female, and so I was rolling with guys. And whenever a female would show up, I would be excited, and I hoped and hoped and hoped she'd stay, and she never did. Whenever a female came, they didn't stay past that one time. And so I was always just rolling with guys. But I see a change. Those same gyms now have a whole group of women. And so it's changed. You have a lot of women training in MMA now where they didn't. And that the last regular training that I was allowed to do was before I was licensed in Nevada. And so I had to stop my training at the end of 2008. And it's changed at those two schools that I attended regularly. Now they have women full-time. So, and I missed out on that. I was never allowed to train with women. So I'm glad to see that there's a lot more women entering it. And they enter it for different reasons now than they did when I did. And you can see the research on that from Dr. David Maeda.
Yeah, I've noticed. I mean, most of the women fights that I've seen, for some reason, it just seems like they put it all out there, like men just can't do, because they've been in business for so long. It's nothing special for two guys to fight, but for two women to fight at an event, even a local event sometimes, it's like they're fighting for all womankind.
They usually steal the show. When women are on the fight card, they usually steal the show. Because they bring it.
Two ladies from Massachusetts, I actually have a YouTube video of it. And it's one of the most viewed YouTube videos I have, because they just put it all out there and went three full rounds of just kicking and punching and wrestling and grappling, it works. And they just, I didn't even know who to pick as the winner at the end. It was so competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
It just seemed like they just had that extra oomph to
yep.
their performance because how significant it was.
I went over to Iraq and did a show for the troops, and there were two female fighters on the card, and they were both also in the armed forces. So they were over serving in Iraq, and the female fighters stole the show. And they had done three rounds, and they had given it everything they had, and all the troops were counting one more round. And they were looking at me like, do we have to? And I said, no, you don't have to do another round. But seriously, they had really given it everything they had, and the crowd wanted to see more. And it was a female fight, and that's just what it was. I mean, they were amateurs, and there was a few pro bouts, and I had gone to Iraq to do a show for the troops, and they showed up in droves. It was the most well-attended event, more popular than any artist they'd brought over there or Super Bowl, you know, champions and everything. So extremely popular. MMA is what's in.
Yeah, we used to actually do this in a series of interviews we did. It was kind of like a debate, boxing versus MMA debate that we did when we first started out back in 2006 and 2007. And we had Ken Shamrock and Iceman John Scully on one show. And Iceman is a boxing trainer and was a professional boxer himself. And I'll never forget their argument about women in combat sports. It was like they were going to fight each other. They were so adamant about their positions. And on one side, it was the boxing guy who was thinking of it more along the lines of a boxing perspective. And women's boxing hasn't really been that successful here in the States. It's actually more successful overseas. And John Scully was kind of making the point that nobody wants to see a woman get her face beat. Women are supposed to be beautiful. So then Ken Shamrock was like going off on his point that, you know, a woman can do anything a man can do if she puts her mind to it. So they were getting at it and almost yelling. I actually remember yelling, you know, break it up, break it up.
Did you know that Ken Shamrock gave me my start as a referee?
Oh, really?
Yes, he did.
Cool.
I was doing boxing in one ring and doing MMA in the other. I was switching back and forth at the gym that Ken Shamrock was training his guys, and he let me in the cage let me in the ring with his guys training with the IFL.
Cool.
Yep. And he told his fighters, "Don't go easy on her. She has to learn how to stay out of the way, and you know, learning to start calling fouls on
yep.
his fighters, learning how to train them not to foul." So yeah, he gave me my start as Ken Shamrock. So yeah. That's my history. And I actually worked several of his shows for Ken Shamrock Productions as some of the shows that he did before I was licensed.
I can still remember days before high school when I first even heard of martial arts to begin with. And my buddy was a huge wrestling fan, even though we were all trying to tell him it was fake and he was still thinking it was real. And, you know, he would talk every now and then about some of the wrestlers that had gone over, like Dan Severn and Ken Shamrock. And we'd never watched it back then, but it's kind of ironic. I ended up falling in love with it years later.
Mm.
But as far as challenges, what is the biggest challenge you each face as referees in general?
Biggest challenge? You want to take that one, Michelle Stark?
My biggest challenge is myself. I think I tend to beat myself up more than anybody else ever could. Sometimes I put a lot of pressure on myself and, you know, thinking that male referees kind of hide under the radar. And, you know, people be like, oh, that male ref, you know, the guy with the hair, the short hair. And they're like, yeah, we have no idea who you're talking about. But when they say, you know, that chick referee or that female referee, they automatically know who they're, you know, you're talking about. So I feel as if that, you know, I have to do an extra better job for the namesake of all other female referees before and after me.
just to make sure I don't mess up or do something stupid or miss something. So I think I'm my own biggest challenge more than anything else.
Yeah, I would say probably the same as Michelle, because balance of like being female, you know, people do watch us and go through our performances with an extra fine tooth comb. And obviously, you know, the biggest challenge as a referee is the safety of the fighters at all times and to make sure that they both leave the cage in as good a condition as possible.
Well, obviously, Michelle hit it on the head. The chick with the braid, yeah. yeah, I think they heard of her or seen her or something. You know, they're actually starting to know my name now. So that gets even scarier, because when they come up and they call me by name, I think I should know who they are. So that gets really bizarre, because you start searching the memory banks and you don't know who they are. That gets weird, you know, so, and you're thinking, who are they? And then when they come up with the, you know, which fighter you're reffing, and you don't, because this is the night before the fight, and luckily we don't get our assignments till right before, and I tell them I don't, they said, oh, because I'm working with so-and-so, and you're going, thank God I don't know who I'm reffing. So, yeah, it's, when they know your name and you don't know who they are, that's a big challenge, and I'm not really one that likes the spotlight. And when I got into this, I didn't really think much about that. I really didn't think too far ahead. I just knew I loved the sport. I knew I loved what I was doing. I didn't really think about how far that I would be able to get or go. I just took it one step at a time and made one goal at a time. So when I got this far and started getting the higher profile events, I'm really actually a fairly shy person. So I kind of avoid the press and avoid the spotlight. So when the show's over, it's kind of difficult for me to go through the crowd and to deal with the crowds. That's a little bit hard for me because I'm basically a shy person. So that's kind of hard for me. That's a challenge.
Yeah, I imagine it's that kind of a occupation that's kind of like being a reporter. You don't want to be part of the story.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
If you are, the story's wrong.
Yeah, I was a bit naive there when I first got into it. I just thought, well, they would notice it for a little bit, then it would die down. You know, I figured there would be a little bit at first, and then it would die down, but it's actually been the opposite. It's just been growing and growing and growing. And so it's kind of, you know, a little bit of anxiety with that. I don't have any anxiety with the fights. And when I'm in the cage, nothing else exists but what's in the cage. I'm very good about that with focusing. And, you know, with my previous career, it really gave me the discipline and the ability to focus in on just what's happening inside the cage. And I can tune out the crowd and they don't bother me. It's the after effect, that spotlight, and everything that I do is 10 times more important and more dissected than any of my male counterparts. It's like usually everything's died down by Monday if it's one of the male referees, but with me, they're still talking about it next Wednesday. You know, so it's definitely more fishbowl than I expected.
Right. And what can you give for advice to anyone, be it female or male, who wants to get into refereeing?
Only do it if you love it. If you don't love it, it's not worth it. You know, you have to do it for the right reasons. If you don't have an absolute love of it, it'll eat you alive. You really have to do it for the love of the sport, because you're not going to do this and get wealthy. That's not what, you know, we don't get paid a living wage off of this. We don't get paid as much as a ring girl, put it that way. We're paid by athletic commissions. We don't make a living off of this. I think the only referee that actually lives off of referee wages is Herb Dean, I believe, but nobody else does. We all do other things. So, really, if you think you're going to make a living as a referee, think again. You really just have to love it. You have to love it. Otherwise, I highly recommend you look at why you're really doing it.
I actually met Herb Dean out in Worcester. He was a Worcester, Massachusetts referee in an event for Mushin MMA that the big guy there, Butterbean, was promoting. And it was kind of funny because he approached me backstage and he was like, oh, here's my number if you ever want to interview me. and then tried to call him like 6 or 7 times. We never interviewed him. He never returned my call. But he like recruited me for an interview, and he's the famous guy.
Yeah.
I always thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah, that's one thing that I'm not comfortable doing is soliciting interviews. That's something that you won't see from me. Very selective. But I appreciate you contacting me.
Yeah, it was great that we were able to arrange this. Like I said, I have a soft spot for females in combat sports because of my background. Just females in general in the industry, you know, no matter what the position. We've had, just a few weeks ago, we had a female announcer on. We've had female grapplers, female jiu-jitsu experts, you know, the works. And
female boxers that I trained.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just something that we try to pride ourselves on, is that we cover all aspects of combat sports, both sex disciplines, works.
Yep.
But
well, I appreciate you including my female cohorts here. It's really an honor to be in the same interview in the same room with them.
Yeah, it's good. It's good for us, too. I think a lot of people would love to kind of get inside your heads a little bit and figure out what it's like. You know, it's kind of a human interest story all around. Like I said at the beginning, that's probably the one thing people think that there would be a weakness would be, you know, pulling a guy off another guy. But you've all kind of explained that right off the bat, that it's not a factor if you know what you're doing. So a lot of people have questions about things like that. And just
have you ever gone to the side of a road with a car accident? You have two different kinds of people. You have people that watch, and you have people that are rescuers. It's a personality trait. And there are those of us that are doers. We just act. We don't even think about it. We just go when we do. And I think that's a personality trait that is required to do what we do. Because there's not a thought that enters my mind when I see that is happening and I have to go in for stoppage. There's no thought about myself. There's no fear about getting hit. There's no fear about myself at all. I just go in, and I am in a protective mode for the downed fighter. That's what's on my mind. And I think as females, we have that nurturing side to us, and we're in protective mode. And you just go in and you do it. It's not a matter of, you know, it's kind of like a car accident, and you just go in and you do what needs to be done. So whatever it takes. And adrenaline is very much a factor in my actions inside the cage. I am a lot stronger than I look. I have actually picked up and thrown fighters who haven't moved fast enough. I did throw Chris Cyborg across the cage. Unfortunately, that footage didn't get shown, but the people that were there saw that. I expected her to weigh more than she did. She didn't resist, and she went flying. So it's like it just happened. We have adrenaline just like the fighters do. And so adrenaline is a huge impact for fighters. It's an impact for referees as well. So don't underestimate us just because we're women, because we're capable of way more than people think we are.
And what kind of training do you have to go through to be certified as a referee? I know it's probably different between the countries, but can you each give us a little bit of a idea of how you got to the place you are as far as training and background?
Well, the in the United States, each state requires different certifications, so you have to go and find out, depending on which state you want to get licensed in, what their requirements are. But there are 4 courses that are approved through the ABC, which is basically the certifying body across the United States. It's the boxing commission. And if you take one of those courses, the majority of states agree to license you in their state. It's Kevin McDonald, Herb Dean, Big John McCarthy, and Mark Fennell have those courses. So if you take one of those courses and you pass them, then different states will license you. But then also some states require you to have 3 years' experience. The last year has to have at least 10 different events on your resume. So there's different states that require different levels of experience, and depending on if you want to start out with their amateur or their pro program. So you just have to look at the different states and what they require and then put in your submission for your application. So you definitely have to have a martial arts background, otherwise you're not going to pass the courses, because you have to understand what the submissions are, what they look like. A lot of the courses include a judging section and then a referee section. So you have to understand movement, so you're not blocking the chute for somebody for a takedown. You have to understand where you need to be for somebody to tap out. You have to know where the tap out's going to happen, if the submission is being applied correctly or incorrectly, so you know when to move in and when to stay back, what the escapes are for a submission, so you're not blocking the escape. You know, you need to understand the ground game very well, because if you don't, then you're standing right where somebody needs to move for escaping the submission, you're blocking that. So you have to have a very good understanding of, you know, the ground game. You have to know what you're seeing. Nothing pisses me off more than when I see a referee stand up a submission. It really pisses me off when they don't understand the ground game. I get very upset, and I'm yelling at my TV. Yes, I do that. I'm yelling at my TV if I see that happen. So it's unfortunate if we have referees that are not trained properly. And another thing that gets me is when I see referees that are extremely out of shape. I think you need to be in good shape. If you can't get down on your knee or stand up quickly, you can't keep up with the fighters, I'm wondering how they're passing their physicals, you know, because they're representing all of us. I think some of them are representing us poorly. That's just an Achilles heel of mine. Anyone else? What's the...
Over in the UK at the minute, we don't have any specific certified courses, and that's why I've come over to get this course with Herb Dean, so that I can go back to the UK with an officially recognised qualification. I think it would be something that should be put in place for all officials in the UK. Again, I think that we need to be following the Americans in this.
Now, along those lines, is there anything each of you would recommend as far as improving the sport in general? One thing that
I would love to see them modernize the judging system.
Yeah, that's a big one. The judging system is way up in the air, and it's so much different. Boxing obviously gets a lot of flack for their decisions, but there's a lot of background for how to judge a boxing fight. It's still subjective, but there's a lot of background. With MMA,
right.
It seems like, even me being a casual fan, started watching in 2003, really, I watch a fight and I try to go by ring generalship or cage generalship and by just overall dominance. Whereas I notice a lot of judges, they'll go by how many takedowns. Put in these different
It's hard to put everything into one little thing, you know. It's too much. So it needs to be modernized for MMA and not use a boxing system for MMA. And the other thing that I would like to see is I would like to see a weight class at 235.
Really? Okay. That's interesting.
Well, I just think there's too much of a gap between 205 and 265. That's what I would like to see. You asked it. Will I get it? No. But you asked. That's my wishes. But I can wish all I want, but it's not going to happen.
You never see what's his name? Bigfoot Silva, if that were true, right?
I can wish for all I want, but those are the improvements I've been fishing for years. Those are not anything new that the athletic commissions have. They've heard these things from me for quite some time, so it's nothing new that they really, because that's things that I've been pushing for years, and they're just not ready to change. So
we'll see. There's always time. Danielle or
Michelle?
Well,
they know I'm pretty good about speaking my mind, so this wouldn't be a surprise for them. So.
All right. Well, Danielle and Michelle, do you want to go next? One thing you'd improve or a few things, ideas?
I think in addition to modernizing judging and scoring criteria, you have to get qualified officials. Each state really needs to ensure that they have the officials that they have officiating these MMA bouts are qualified enough to do so. That's probably the biggest and number one thing that needs to be taken care of. And I like what Kim was saying as far as implementing a different weight class between 205 and 265. And I think it's called the baby weight. I'm not too sure. But I do like that. And it's such a huge disparity between 205 and 265. And then we had super heavyweights that are, 300 pounds. Like we had Brock Lesnar, who walks around at 305 and he cuts down to 265. It'd be great to see some super heavyweight fights. That's my
thing. Yeah, there's got to be one organization out there that does it that way that you can look at. I can't think of one offhand, but I know I've seen super heavyweight boxing fights before, whether they were regulated or not.
Officiating the red ring as a super heavyweight fight, much less the female fight, but the dogs love the stuff. You get these 400-pound guys in there, and they're in their bang, and the crowds love it, and they go crazy over them.
What's something you would improve?
I would really like to see the UK MMA scene get more respect because, again, we do sometimes have very uneducated crowds that when it goes to ground, they don't respect what's happening. And I do think that it is the MMA would become more respectable to normal people in the UK if it had a governing body and if it had licensed officials as well. Because I think part of the reason that the sport's not respected over in the UK is because people can't relate to who it's sanctioned by and things like that. And I think if it was modernised in that respect, like it is in America, I think we would get more respect for the sport.
Well, isn't it true that they refer to mixed martial arts in most areas in the UK as ultimate fighting? And the UFC got a little bit of a tizzy over that in the past. Ultimate fighting.
Us as UK people just think it's cage fighting, just think it's two thugs, basically, being in a cage, battering each other. They don't actually understand the amount of skill, training, talent that the fighters need to possess to do well in it. And I think it's a real shame that the fighters don't get the credit that they deserve.
All right. Tony, you got anything over there? You've been quiet.
No, I was just listening. I throw my little tidbits in here, as I want to conclude on that, it is good to, get more female involvement in the sport. I know, we've had some female professional boxing referees. Now we're getting with the female mixed martial art referees. And that's good, because the more people you have passion involved in the sport, either boxing or mixed martial arts, it can only help in the long run. And
again, I have a friend that's a boxing referee in Jersey, and her name's Sparkle, and she's a good boxing referee.
And when we were talking to Amy Hayes a few weeks ago, who's the professional ring announcer, one of the things that she said was she was at ringside one time, and I forget if she's working as a ring card girl or if she's just a spectator, I don't remember, but she was watching the ring announcer, and she was like, I can do that. And
cool.
She's been very successful. Any time you can go out there and you can break a boundary, and that is helping more people, it, in the long run, only helps.
I agree with that. That's what we're trying to do. Inspiring young women to go out and do whatever it is that they want to do, I get a lot of that. Every time I do a show, I have at least a couple of females that come up to me and tell me that, they've been inspired, whether it's to do this or do something else. That they've done some, that it shows them they can do something that they want to do. It shows them they can do anything that they want to do.
All Now, I've obviously, you all talked about how Tim's an inspiration in a lot of ways. Have there ever been any other role models that have helped you all along the way?
Mill Slane was my inspiration to become a referee. And he's a boxing referee.
Pretty good luck, Pat.
So he's the one that got me started. And then, of course, Steve Mazzagatti was my mentor. So other than that, that was pretty much it. I didn't have any females to turn to, so... You still there, Rich?
We lost him.
Hello, Rich. Are you still there?
Yeah, it's like an hour one right now.
Hello, Rich. No, I think it's done. Hello?
All right, we're back. But it doesn't look like we have it back, unfortunately. But that was good while it was going.
Yeah. I mean, when we, for the most part, we're in the middle of wrapping most of it off, so. All
right.
Did you get a new server this week?
Did I get what?
Like a new server or...
Yeah, we moved to a free blog site.
Okay.
Fortunately, I got to do so much work to get the old blog back that I had to move to a new site for the future posts. But what we're going to do is we're going to keep the old blog. We're going to try to get it back to where we can put new posts up eventually. It's going to stay as the archives for now. And then if we have, like, exclusive articles we want to put a media pass tag on, we'll put them up at the old blog where we have that capability. But
I noticed we didn't have any audio problems this week.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that was just a matter of luck. But, last week I tried a different method. It was it's actually like a remote server thing. It's called Ready Broadband. You just plug it in like a USB port, and it's your own little server. You have to pay like $75 a month for it. So I only had one hiccup last week, and then just this week it's just been luck. I wasn't even able to connect to that Ready Broadband server. I don't know whether I'm out of space or what, but it just wouldn't recognize it for some reason. So I just went with the regular system, and it was working until then. I don't know what happened. It's weird because... if it usually drops somebody, it's because it's offline, so it would drop you,
right,
too. But it dropped the show. And it looks like they dropped off real quickly after that. It's kind of weird. Hopefully they'll call back in. Not seeing them here yet, but eventually they'll be back with us, I'm sure. I don't think they want to end like that. But I don't know if you've been checking out some of the blog posts, but the big thing lately that I've been kind of following is, you know how Bobby Gunn went into bare-knuckle boxing?
Yeah. absolutely, yeah.
Well, lately he's been trying to call out Roy Jones Jr., our former guest. No, boxing, regular boxing. And I just got this message now, just a few minutes ago. Bobby Gunn is going to fight James Toney instead for the IBA World Heavyweight Championship. So his seems like his foray into bare knuckle boxing is on the back burner all of a sudden. He's getting back, and just because he probably got his name around with that, and now people are trying to set him up with boxing matches. So they're going to fight April 7th in a 12-round fight at the Lander Center in South Haven, Mississippi. Gunn is 21-4 with 18 knockouts, and he hasn't had a fight in boxing since he lost to Thomas Adamek in September of 2009. And last summer, he claimed the world heavyweight bare-knuckle boxing title when he defeated Richard Stewart by way of KO in the third round. And nothing material between Gunn and Roy Jones Jr. And then Toney made a plea, and he accepted. I'll try to get him back on the show. I know we kind of got cut off from him, too. Speaking of getting cut off. When we talked to him, he had technical difficulties derail that whole thing. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Toney is 73-7 with 44 knockouts. He won the vacant. Yeah, I know. That's 80 fights total. He won the vacant IBA.
He won first middleweight title almost 21 years ago.
Right. Didn't Roy Jones Jr. said he was the hardest puncher he ever faced?
He was so having a hard time making weight no matter what class he was in. I remember trying fighting Roy Jones. He had to basically drop like 15 or so pounds in like a matter of like days, and you could tell he was just,
you know, wasted from it. Well, Toney won the vacant IBA heavyweight title in 2008. It's hard to believe that. I don't think he's fought that many times since then, but he still has somehow.
I think his last fight was he took a beating from the same guy that recently knocked out Roy Jones. And James went over to Moscow also. Dennis Lebedev.
Yeah.
Beat him by decision, knock out Roy, and then beat James by decision.
Wow. Let's see what else for news while we're waiting. Attorney General admits that amateur MMA is actually not banned in New York. It's just professional MMA. That was in the news this last couple of weeks. And also the mixed martial arts bill to in New York City just recently passed in another committee. So it could be the year that happens there. We'll see. Let's see what else we got here. One story I forgot to mention last military recently. For the first time in, I think, 20 years? Yeah, 20 years. The Marine Corps team, 2012 Armed Forces Boxing Champ on February 3rd. The Army had a 20-year winning streak. It was at the Marine Corps base in Camp Pendle, California. They hosted the whole event. And in the final bout of the night, Marine Sergeant Seuss Gardner took the gold, Army Sergeant Marvin. And that was the breaker. And Gardner's left eye swelled closed early in the fight, but the audience went wild when the ringside doctor allowed the fight to continue. So it was a real night for the Marines. Yeah, broke the mold there and stopped a 20-year ring streak there. And it's kind of funny because we did just talking last week and the week before about Goody Petronelli. He came up through that system of military boxing in the Navy, which, as you know, if you're in the military, is the armed service that carries around the Marines. Wherever they go, pretty much. See what else we got. And a Argentina boxing riot recently. I don't know if you've seen that, any stories about that. It's a pretty interesting video. I was throwing and everything. Police officers were injured. You know, it was got beat really badly, and the unanimous decision for the other guy, and the crowd just went. And thankfully, the EG riots didn't have any deaths or anything, but a lot of people were thrown in chairs. And let's move to talk about the New York Jets. There's a story this week about as Uncle Joe Jacobs got him involved in him because he had a bad temper. And that only made it worse. They taught a person with temper how to fight. And he actually went 35-2 as an amateur, twice winning AAU heavyweight. Did you know that? Brandon Jacobs was an amateur boxer. Running back. Did you know that, Tony? Oh, did you know that Brandon Jacobs, the running back, was an amateur boxer?
I did not.
Yeah, his record was 35.
Really? No, I did not know that.
Management or boxing, and he did. First, University to form Jacobs manager, and he says, "I kind of didn't want to do it because it's a big role to take on with someone's career because I could mess up his chance." Sorry, folks, for the delay. We had a little technical difficulties. But we're going to wrap it up.
You.
All right, we're back. I don't know where I left off, what you last heard. But we only have a minute left. So might as well get to our final thoughts. You got anything for us?
No, just looking forward to the Lockhaven Boxing Show this weekend, and come back to do a full report next week, and hopefully it's a great show, and the young guys from the Haven step up.
I figured you'd want to talk about the Blue Horizon coming back. Did you hear anything about this?
I heard that. I didn't want to jinx it.
Well, I guess to a hotel with two restaurants, and
you know what's funny? They're sitting there and they're talking, and I'm reading the article in the paper. They're like, "Well, you know, we hope it, it meshes with the boxing crowd meshes with the crowd that we want to, bring in." And I'm sitting there thinking, you're in fucking North Philadelphia. You know? Yeah, you're only a couple miles from Temple University, granted. I know they probably want to try to put a nice establishment, you know, for some people that are visiting, Temple or have family going to Temple and all that. And I can appreciate that. But what I'm still confused about is the fact that you're still on Broad Street in North Philadelphia. You know, we're not talking about Beverly Hills here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess construction's going to start in May or so, at the end of May.
Yeah, I mean, we will certainly see.
And I still don't know what kind of hotel it's going to be. They're talking of several different flagship hotels. And they got a $6 million state grant, so whatever it's going to be, it's going to be nice. but we'll see what happens. A very nice place to have a fight, from what you've described, and never been there myself.
I really hope so. I've been to a lot of fights there, a lot of memories there. A lot of great fighters have passed through that building. A lot of UFAs too been at fights there. It's an institution that should be preserved.
Right. And as we kind of related to a little bit earlier, we had a new change at Fight News. Our latest posts are going to be posted at fightnewsunlimited.com. rather than unlimitedfightnews.com/WordPress. We're going to iron out a few kinks in the regular blog, then we're going to be going back there for a couple things, but eventually I think we're just going to transfer everything from there to the free blog, so we don't have that problem again. And it's one of those things we can do because we have unlimitedfightnews.com and fightnewsunlimited.com registered, and most of the hosting's at unlimitedfightnews.com, so instead of just forwarding that to FightNewsUnlimited.com to UnlimitedFightNews.com, we can actually use it for two different purposes. So basically, I did what I did for a couple other blogs like MemorialsForHeroes.com and BattleOfTheBadges.info, where I just take the domain and I forward it to a Google Blogger account, which is kind of interesting because that means we get our Google ads back from the other blog for having some kind of copyrighted video on there. They weren't happy with us, so they suspended our Google ads, so maybe it'll make a little bit more money. Who knows? We will see. And next week we're going to try to get a boxing guest on, because I know it's been at least 2 weeks since we had one, but we had about 6 or 7 weeks in a row for you. At least one boxing guest, if not two. Sorry about our guest tonight getting cut off. It was a good conversation while it lasted.
It was a good interview.
Definitely good to have three different females who are pioneers as referees. Definitely appreciated their perspective and what they had to offer. And definitely wish them luck in the future. Sounds like the UK, but a growing pains going on, so it'd be nice to see Danielle's wishes come true over there with the governing body and all that. And hopefully Kim is not the only one who gets to be a female referee in the UFC, and some other women get a shot. I'm sure she'd be happy to make that happen however she can. Touch with her and keep following her and Danielle Curzon and Michelle Browning as well. One thing we didn't really get to talk about with Danielle was her interesting background. Sounds like it would be a great side story for the blog or something, but she's actually a descendant of British royalty.
Wow.
Believe it or not. And parents got involved in a messy divorce. Our mother ended up remarrying to Hopper. And her father got involved with a prostitute from the United States. So just a very weird, crazy story. But actually, because of all the bodyguards and everything around her family growing up, it's what got her interested in martial arts and being a bodyguard herself. So that's one of the things she does on the side. And Emma Watson is
one of her clients as a bodyguard, so she's been involved with some, and just has an incredible background. So maybe we'll have her on alone on a future show or something, or you know, catch up with her at some point and do an article about it. Definitely all of them were excellent, really gave a good perspective on what it's like to be a female referee, and show you it can be done. So good to have them. And that's about all the time we have, so till next week, folks.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week. This is the Tornado, and I'm out.
Thanks for stopping by.
Later.